Welcome to the Gerald Journal podcast. My name is Holly Hensley. I'm the librarian at Gerald High School, and I facilitate this podcast. But the real stars are our hosts, Christine Collins and Stephen York, and our producer, Kessler Mixon. All three are smart and outgoing students here at Gerald High School, and they are very excited to bring this podcast to you. We have big plans to interview interesting characters and paint a colorful picture of life here in Gerald, Texas. Gerald's a small town located about an hour north of Austin, and we hope you tune in to the Gerald Journal podcast to hear what's happening in this up-and-coming community.
All right, and welcome everyone to the Gerald Journal podcast. I'm your host, Stephen York, and joining me today is always the lovely and beautiful Miss Christine, and our editor-in-chief, Kessler Miller. And joining us today, we have Mr. David Matthew, if you'd like to introduce yourself, my good sir.
All right. Well, thank you all for inviting me here this afternoon. My name, as you said, is David Scott Matthew. I go by my middle name, Scott, and I'm the city judge in Gerald, Bartlett, and Granger, and the chief juvenile probation officer for Williamson County.
So, Judge Matthews, would you mind telling us how you got started in the position that you are now?
Sure. Thank you. Good question. So, about 30 years ago, I was a student at Southwestern University, and I was there on a basketball scholarship. And I began volunteering at the Juvenile Justice Center, which at that time was a little 10-bed center over on College Avenue in Georgetown. And I applied for a job and became a juvenile supervision officer there working for the county, and very quickly moved up and became a probation officer, and then wrote a grant and started a residential program. And my director at the time, Charlie Skaggs, who was a great mentor to me, lives in Georgetown still, I followed his lead, and I thought one day I could maybe be the chief probation officer. And that happened for me about 12 years ago when he retired. And I was assistant chief prior to that for about 10 years. Regarding the judge job, that was an interesting thing. My wife grew up here and went to Gerald High School. And she was a member of a 10-member family, 10 siblings here in Gerald. And so we had several folks that we knew, and this was kind of my adopted home since she was from here. And back in, I guess it would have been 2008, the city decided that they needed a city judge and needed to set up a court when they became, I think it was incorporated. And I think prior to that, their city mayor functioned both as a magistrate and the mayor, which if anybody knows anything about city politics, you don't want to be in the business of handing down punishments or fines and being elected. So was smart on their part. They decided to set up a court and have an independent city judge. So I came in and helped them set that up. And at the end of that, they asked me if I would like to be the city judge. And in Texas, which is very interesting, justices of the peace, county judges, and city judges don't necessarily have to have a law degree. So I have a master's in business administration, but because of my experience working in the probation field and spending so much time in the courts over 30 years, I felt like it was a really good fit for me. So that's the history of how I, you know, came to be where I am.
Interesting. So, if you wouldn't mind, I'm kind of interested. Could you possibly like walk us through kind of from getting the case to final decision, like the process that you go through?
Absolutely. Okay, so with regard to municipal court, 90% of the time people are cited on the highway and they're given a court date, and they're given all the paperwork where they can enter a plea and then pay a fine. And most of the time that's what happens, and no one ever appears in court. But from time to time people have mitigating circumstances. Oftentimes they'll say that they don't believe that they're guilty of the offense, which everyone has a right to a trial or have a right to a jury trial. They can have a trial before me or have a right to a trial before six citizens from the city who make that decision about their guilt or innocence. But most often people come to court because they don't have the money to pay the fine. So they need either to do community service in lieu of a fine, or they're looking for a way for it not to end up on their record, because that impacts their in their ability to pay, you know, their insurance premiums go up and things like that. So when I receive that citation and we set it for a court date and they come in, the first thing I do is I ask them for a plea, and their plea is either of no contest or guilty or not guilty. And then if they plead not guilty, they would say that they want a trial before a judge, which is me, to make all the decisions, or they want a trial before a jury, and that's their right to do so. 99% of the time, they enter a plea of guilty or no contest, which really gets you to the same outcome. And then they are asking for either a payment plan, or they would like to do a driver's safety course, which you can do that if you qualify from the moment that you get the citation. You don't have to come to court in order to do that. Mm-hmm. And the result of the driver's safety course is that your charge can be dismissed, so it doesn't count on your record. Mm-hmm. The key to that is you can't have a commercial driver's license. So if you drive for a living and have a what they call a CDL for short, mm-hmm. You don't qualify for the driver's safety course, and you don't qualify to have your case deferred. So that's one of the things in the Texas legislature I would like to see them look at, because people who drive for a living oftentimes when they're cited don't have a recourse or a way to have a case dismissed and to still be sanctioned. And many people who employ people who drive, if they get one citation, they lose their livelihood. So not only are they getting a fine, but they're losing their opportunity to work for a business. And so I think that's a little unfair. And so hopefully that's something they will look at. But again, back to the large majority of folks come in and it's their first appearance and only appearance in a court of law. And so I try to treat everybody with dignity and utmost respect. I want them to understand that they have a voice and that they have an opportunity to be involved in the decisions that are going to impact them. One is, you know, I ask them, how long is it going to take you to pay a fine if they enter a plea of guilty or no contest? And so I try to figure out the best avenue for them to do that so that they're not pressed. You know, people come in at Christmas time and they've got a $200 traffic fine. At the same time, they've got children at home. They're on maybe a limited income. So we have to try to figure out ways to both get that taken care of, plus, you know, their other responsibilities, paying their bills and taking care of their families and things like that. So that's really what I do mostly, is I work and negotiate with people how to get their fines paid for, or how to navigate the system so that they don't have a record when it's over.
And you said in your opinion, the best way to get that covered is to go to a driver's learning course rather than to, like, not go into court at all. You said in your best opinion, the best way to get the driver's citation removed is to go into court. And we say you don't have to go into court to get a driver's learning course, but you should go into court rather than just pay the fine.
Right. So a couple of ways to keep the case from actually being on your record. One would be to take the driver's safety course. So in order for you to take a driver's safety course, you can't have had it in the last year. So the previous 365 days, you can't have taken it. And a lot of people, they take it every year. Some people take it just to get your insurance premiums reduced. But then you can't take it again until, you know, a year has passed. So they have to qualify, first of all. And if they don't qualify, the other avenue would be to come in and ask me. And I mentioned this the last time I came and talked to the criminal justice class. I don't think people necessarily know that they can ask for a deferred, which means they're going to plead guilty or no contest. I'm going to set aside that finding of guilt for a period of time. It's almost like a mini probation. I can go up to 6 months with that. And so I would put in some conditions, and it could be, you know, one of the standard conditions is you not receive any moving violations, citations during the period of time. So you have to really focus on your driving. I can set aside the fine, or I can add additional amount in case a person doesn't comply, you know, so that, you know, they've got some skin in the game other than just it being found guilty or not guilty. A lot of times people will come in for an alcohol-related offense, and so in those cases, I'm required to have them comply with an alcohol awareness course or substance abuse awareness course, let's say drug paraphernalia, person comes in for that. If they're under 18 years old, there are certain requirements they have to meet. If they're under 21, there are certain requirements they have to meet. They're not all just traffic violations. Some people come in for city ordinance like junk cars and tall grass and dilapidated buildings and things like that that the city would go around and say, hey, this needs to be repaired or you need to take care of this. And then when they don't do it, they file a citation in my court and we summons that owner to the property or to the court and discuss with them the violation on their property. And then typically I give them 30 days to remedy that before I set in a fine. So I just want it to be really formal and them to know and that we have a record that shows that they've come to court and they know what the problem is. So that's kind of the gamut of things that we handle in court. But typically if a person gets a citation and they don't want to just pay the citation and they don't qualify for driver safety course, if they'll come to court and ask for deferred, and that, you know, that's an option in any court. So people need to remember that.
Interesting. Now, I have two questions for you. One being, what's like the typical case you run through? Is it mostly driving-related incidents? Is it mostly domestic, anything like that? And then how many of the cases do you deal with influence juveniles and people who aren't necessarily adults yet?
Okay. So I have to qualify that by which job are we talking about. So in my juvenile job, all the cases involve juveniles, but in my city job, most cases that involve juveniles, I have the option to refer to the justice court, which is in each county. There are four precincts, and each precinct is run by a justice of the peace. And so I can refer that case to the justice of the peace, where they have far more resources than we have. And that's typically what I do in a juvenile case. Mm-hmm. And it's the same outcome, the same record process, everything. So we really have a choice, like a failure to attend school or truancy could be filed either in my municipal court or it could be filed in the justice court. And if I have any reason to believe that there might be a conflict, which as the juvenile chief there could be, I can refer that to the justice court. And so what was the second part of your question?
The second part of my question was on sort of the daily, what's the most common sort of case that you deal with?
Thank you. So most commonly, people come in for not having insurance, failing to maintain financial responsibility, speeding, failure to yield right away, or for driving without a license. Those are probably the four most common cases. City ordinance-wise, Gerald, we don't have a lot of city ordinance violations. People here, I mean, this is a city that's on the grow and that people are very proud of what they've got here. And so we don't have as many issues we'd have in other cities that I represent. But it would be the only one that I've dealt with here was a dilapidated building that needed to come down, that had already been found to be a hazard in the community. And so it needed to be torn down and we negotiated how long that would take. And the property owner didn't end up getting fined. They were able to comply in a reasonable amount of time.
So knowing that you have two jobs that you do and they both relate to public service, so what you do affects people on a day-to-day basis. How are you able to manage everything on a day-to-day?
Well, that's a great question. I've not really thought about it much, but I would say that I want to back up and go, the reason that I believe that I'm involved in service is that growing up, I had the benefit of having a lot of people positively impact my life. And I recognize the importance of serving others. And when you serve others, this is a firm belief I have in juvenile services and what I try to instill in the kids that we work with and our staff, is that when you serve others, your needs will be met. If you're focused on your own needs all the time, it usually creates an environment where you're separated, because people don't typically want to be around you for that matter. But if you're out serving others, your needs will be met. And that's a hard thing for people to learn. But I think that's, for me, it was an early recognition that I had a lot of people who invested in me and expected me to do good things. And I think that I fell into both of my jobs. I would say that spiritually, we all have a path, and it's decided for us. I didn't know what that was going to be. It wasn't like I said I'm going to be a lawyer when I was 12 years old, or I was going to be a police officer, or I was going to be anything. I just worried about growing up. And then once I grew up, I fell into the positions that I think I was meant to be in. And I think the judicial jobs is the what I bring to the table is that I bring compassion. But at the same time, I think I can balance that with accountability and what I think is appropriate and fair, treat people with dignity. And I think that serves the city, because in a small town, you need people who are not biased in one way or another. In order to make people feel like their voice is heard and that people are being treated fairly. I think in the juvenile justice realm, I think no matter what field I would have gone into, I would have strived to end up trying to be the leader in that field, because I'm very competitive. I was a basketball player. So it's one of those things that, but I also think this, a lot of people say, well, I don't want to move up or move out of the position I'm in because I like what I'm doing. I'm serving at a certain level. But I think in any service field, if you have more to offer, you can impact more the higher you move into that field. So while I was able to, when I had a probation caseload, help 20 or 30 people at a time as the director and setting the direction for the organization and making sure that we follow our mission and vision, I'm able to impact thousands and with similar energy input.
So I asked this question when Judge Gravel and in, and I feel like it's always good to get a second opinion. So when he came in, I asked him if he felt that the judiciary system somewhat leaned towards the criminals, favoring the people who would be found guilty. I forget their names. Excuse me.
Defendants?
The defendants. Thank you very much. I apologize. Okay. But I was just wondering on your thoughts. Do you feel as if it leans more towards them or any other way, or is it dead even?
Okay. So I think this is a good time for a brief history lesson. So, and I just want to talk about the judicial system in Williamson County and give you what I know in history, and then on top of that, what I know about the history that I've lived in this county. So I want to go all the way back to one of the things that we should be very proud of here in Williamson County is that we had a prosecutor here in the early 1900s named Dan Moody. And Dan Moody was the first person to successfully prosecute the Ku Klux Klan for the bad acts that they did. And so Williamson County, he went on to become governor of the state of Texas. So he was quite an influential person and had done some amazing things. That's something that Williamson County can be very, very proud of. Over time, our county went from, not unlike Gerald, from a small, sleepy little place to a booming, a metropolitan area. And during that growth period, Williamson County became known as being tough on crime. And we joked, a lot of people would joke and go, hey, you know, like if people go to the coast, you say they went to South Padre on vacation and left on probation. They would say similar things about Williamson County that, and that's if you were lucky, you left on probation if you did something wrong. Mm-hmm. So I think what's happened over time, we gained a reputation of not really being smart on crime, but just being tough on crime. And ultimately, that won't work if you're going to make lasting change. You can use that as a deterrent. You can scare people by going, hey, we're going to throw the book at you. But if you really want people to change their life and their path and direction, and you want to provide for public safety, you have to have more of a social and mental health focus, social services and mental health focus, because a lot of times when people do things wrong, it's not necessarily because they're bad people. It's because they've not adapted well to their environment, or they've used poor coping skills to navigate that environment, which is ends them up in the criminal justice system. So I hope that helps to answer the question. I think that we're in a good place in Williamson County. We've got a district attorney. His name is Sean Dick. Awesome guy. I think he cares about people genuinely, and he wants to provide for public safety, but it's a good balance. He understands the importance of mental health. You mentioned Sheriff Chody, another man who he runs a huge sheriff's department in jail, and he's on a commission that oversees mental health as a law enforcement official. So he's focused on that. We have Dee Hobbs as a county attorney, and he also is focused on mental health. And then you met with Judge Bill Gravel, who is from here, from this area, from Gerald. And so he's another person who's helping because of his status in the county, being the top, administrative person in Williamson County, is able to help focus resources and funding where they need to go to help people who are struggling. So we're in a good place in Williamson County right now.
So it seems like the theme is to really focus and hone in on mental health. So when you're talking to juveniles and you know that they possibly could be in that position because whatever they have going on, it's never been addressed. So like they're acting out on it. So what steps is the justice system or like the system here in Williamson County taking to improve on mental health and their services?
Well, y'all are getting really detailed, and that's a great, great question. So in Williamson County, and one of the things that I'm proud of, as I am the other elected officials and the things they're doing, is that we have a focus on what's called trauma-informed care. And trauma-informed care is exactly what it sounds like. It's looking at people through a lens of not what's wrong with you, but what's happened to you. And then taking that information, that post-traumatic stress that they've gone through, or those adverse childhood experiences, and then figuring out what adaptations they've made based on those things that caused them to make thinking errors, that caused them to use substances or to be aggressive or whatever the problem is, and then develop our programs and services through that lens. And so in Williamson County Juvenile Services, we've adopted what's called trust-based relational intervention as a framework to working with youth and families. And it was originally set up by Texas Christian University as a model for the child welfare system. And I thought to myself, kids in the child welfare system are not unlike the kids in our system. They all have, most all have traumatic experiences that have occurred in their lives that help mold and shape them. And so we are now working with all these, the youth and families that come through our services in facilities, out in field probation, and even in our prevention, in a way that we use trauma-informed care. And we also are looking for what's called SPARK. So what would motivate you to get up in the morning? What is there any passion that you have that that maybe you still need to explore more, whether it's sports or music or media or art or anything, and try to figure out what that is, then develop a relationship with that person to connect them to people in the community who can help them move forward. For us, as a juvenile probation department or juvenile services department, we're only with folks for a very limited amount of time. I mean, if a person gets in trouble we serve age 10 to 17, but most people aren't on probation from 10 till 17. They get in trouble at 15 or 16, and you've got them, until they turn 18 years old, or most of the time it's a year of probation that people get, unless it's a really severe offense. So it's important for us to know what community resources are out there so that whenever they leave services with us, they have a continuity of care where they can continue that on. And I want to give you an example of that. So I had a young man in the Cedar Park office, 12-year-old boy, and come from what we call hard places, come from a rough background, and was in services with us. And we found out that his spark was running. And it wasn't because he ran off from us, but he was a really, I think, a solid runner. Well, our probation officer had several things they have to do in order to pursue that spark. One is make sure that the young man had a physical, that he had running shoes and running clothes, and then for us to find a running club for him to join and make sure he had transportation and it fit into his schedule. So coordinating, making that happen. You wouldn't think of traditionally a probation department doing those kind of things. It would be more, you show up for your appointment, get a drug test, and go over the probation conditions, and they go home. Well, instead, we're out there connecting him to the community. So this young man, 12 years old, started working out with a running club. Well, the running club took him under their wing and said, hey, this kid shows real promise. And so they signed him up for the Junior Olympics. And he'd done this for, you know, a couple of months. So he'd been training with them. He goes to the Junior Olympics, and he is recorded as the 12th fastest 12-year-old in the country.
Wow.
So do you think that's going to open doors for that kid? The struggle will be from 12 until 18, keeping him on that path. So the way to do that is to just, you know, to give him hope that there's a future, have him understand what that future looks like, and have him connected to people in the community who can help him keep a sight on that future. And so that's one example. And we have multiple examples of just different kinds of cases and kids, but that's one that always resonates with me.
Yeah, and I would say that's just incredible that you are doing that and opening up paths for all these young kids in the area. Now, what I was wondering is how does, obviously being a judge, you are involved with a lot of people every day, and unfortunately some people are not the nicest of people out there, but how does your work schedule and your family and social schedule, how do they all kind of fit together, and how do you balance it all?
So thank you for that question. I would say this. I try to treat everybody with respect and dignity, and then regardless of where I see them, and you make a good point, because after 30 years in the juvenile justice system, and you know over 10 years as a judge, you don't remember everybody you run into. But probably the greatest honor that I could have is when someone recognizes me that I don't recognize, and they praise me or they thank me for the way that I treated them in one of these settings. You know, so if it's a child and family, or it's in the juvenile setting, and they're thankful for the resources that we provided them, and they say that it's made a difference in their life, it's nice. That's a good feeling. If it's in the court system, I had a defendant last week who said, I want to take a picture with you at the court. And I was like, why? I thought, you know, first of all, I thought, is he going to post this on social media and put horns on me or something? I don't know. But he was like, you're the nicest judge I've ever met, and I just wanted to show pictures of who I met with and how you managed my case and how you made me feel, and I just want to show people who you are. I said, cool. I would have let him take a picture either way. But those are nice things. The other side of that is when you work with people that are 15, 16 years old, you look at me, I probably don't change. I've changed over 30 years, mm-hmm. but not as drastically as someone who's 15 or 16. So if you're 15 or 16, and let's say I treated you poorly, or you felt like you were treated poorly and didn't have a voice, and you're 30, I have no idea who you are, right?
Right.
You could, you know, so I just think that it's important to treat people with respect, kindness, and dignity, and honor, and ultimately, you know, people who aren't going to, if they think they're getting over on you, it's hurting them. It's not hurting me. You know, I get paid to come and do a job. And if they don't take that being kind as a gift, and they use it as a, you know, I'm just gonna walk away from here and not manage my, you know, responsibilities, then it's my responsibility at that point to hold them accountable. But I always try to give everybody an opportunity first of all.
And for the kids listening that want to become a judge or want to get into law, and they don't necessarily want to take the traditional path, because as you said, you didn't take that path here in Texas because you don't necessarily have to, what would you say to somebody who does not want to take the traditional route of going to law school or getting a degree in criminal justice, et cetera?
I would say that probably the most important thing is to focus on leadership. You always can be a student of learning leadership styles and leadership skills. And I think that having a solid foundation of people who you're accountable to and part of a group, not people that you're indebted to. There's a difference, because if you're indebted to someone, you're not going to make a very good impartial officer looking at things from all sides, because you're going to be impacted by people that you owe something. But it is important to be surrounded by people who are good people, who can vouch for you that you are part of their life and they're part of your life, but not codependent, so to speak. But leadership, I think, is the key in being able to make sound decisions. That's all part of it. You got to learn to look at decisions from all sides. You can't just go, oh, well, that person did X, and so this is the punishment for that, because there are always going to be mitigating circumstances. But then you have to know when those things apply and when they don't, and how much they should apply and how much you should consider those things. That makes sense.
All right. So as we kind of start to wrap up here, one quick question for you is, as technology and stuff is getting more implemented into everyday life, now your cars, watches nowadays, has the new technology kind of changed the way that y'all in the judiciary system do things and how the courts work?
So that is an excellent question. Yes, I will say yes, and then I want to give you a couple of examples. So when I began as a probation officer 30 years ago, I was handed a clipboard and a pager. Do y'all know what pagers are?
Yes,
sir. So a pager was it's an electronic signal that told you what number you needed to call because someone was trying to get a hold of you if you were out in the field, instead of having a cell phone. And so you had to race to a payphone somewhere or someone you knew that had a phone to call them. The principle behind the clipboard was that's where I had to keep all my notes for everything. You had to write them on a clipboard. And I remember, and I'm not that old, I know to y'all I seem that old, but I remember when the county brought in computers and said, you're going to be able to communicate on this computer with multiple people, and you're not going to have to talk to them on the phone. And I was like, what? I was complete. It was early 90s, 90, 91. And I was completely, and I think Williamson County was a little slower to do things than other counties back then. That's when they brought in computers. And then I can't imagine doing either of my jobs without the internet and without email and without an electronic calendar. I was talking to y'all earlier just about my day-to-day. And without that, my electronic calendar tells me where I've got to be at, you know, on minute-to-minute time, and tells me in the morning what I need to prepare for each day. So on that side, it's created efficiency, but just like with anything, there are conversations that need to be had face to face that you don't put in an email. And you guys know that from social media. People say things on social media that they should never say, and they're hurtful and they're mean, but they think they're protected. And so there's a downside to it. Now on the technology side for criminal justice, one of the things that's been great. So let's just take the traffic court. We have electronic bill pay now. So in the old days, you had to go to a court and sit down and pay a fine. Now you can, you know, put a credit card or check card number in and pay your fine and move on. That's one of the benefits. On the higher end criminal justice, one of the things they've come up with is electronic monitoring through GPS. And so in the old days, a person might not have an opportunity to be released from jail or from detention because we really didn't know if we could trust where they were going to be. And so now we can place them on an electronic monitor that has exclusion zones or inclusion zones, and we know where they are. I mean, unless they cut it off, and if they cut it off, it'll show that there was a tamper, and then we'd do a warrant and go pick them up. But a person now can be on house arrest at home with electronic monitor on that tracks their movement. And let's say they had a victim across town, it can even signal that victim if they're in that neighborhood. So there are a lot of drug testing. It used to be you had to mail everything off and wait 2 weeks to know whether a person was positive for a drug. Now we have instantaneous tests for multiple ranges of substance abuse. Same thing with assessments for mental health. So you have somebody who gets booked into the jail or the detention center. We have assessments that we can do on a computer now to tell us what risk level they are, what needs they may need to have met before they leave, those kind of things. So love technology, love it.
All right, well, thank you, Mr. Scott Matthew. It has been a real pleasure talking to you, and hope everyone out there learned as much as we did. Very, very interesting, the work you're doing, I have to say. Keep up the good work.
Thank you so much.
No problem. And
I'm honored to be here.
Oh, hold on. We got one last thing here.
Yeah, so one last thing I would like to say. Thank you again, Judge Matthews, for coming to speak to us. It really does mean a lot. And one of the things I've noticed from all our guests that have come to speak to us is that there's a common theme. And what I've noticed is that they always tell us that somebody in their life had been impactful to them, had mentored them, had invested in them, had told them that they were going to be something or encouraged them to do something good. And they've grown up to not only do something good for themselves, but for other people as well. So I just want the viewers to listen in and that you can be great. I know this sounds really cliche and corny, but like everybody on our show that has said, when you invest in people, like, it really does make a difference to somebody out there. So I just want that to be a takeaway from all the interviews that we've done, as Judge Matthews has said as well. The investment in somebody, it really does make a difference. So I just want to thank you for sharing that.
Absolutely. Thank you.